Episode 1139, My Strength is My Story with Stephen Hoffman. Make elephants fly.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at a stop
sign, watching people. Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us a very special guest from Silicon Valley. His name is Stephen Hoffman. Are you ready for radical innovation? Are you ready to change things up in your business, in your life? Maybe you've been working on something and you're just like, it's not going for me. It's time to make elephants fly. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends, family, business entrepreneurs of Stephen's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, I can tell you that Stephen and I had an incredible chat. And it is one that you are going to want to deep dive with us. I promise you, whether you have a brick and mortar store, maybe you're a consultant for a network marketing company, or you're building your own business from ground zero, this is going to change the way you look at things. Inventions versus innovation. We talk about everything from what ifs to pressures to trends to catching the wave to actually figuring out what you want to do with your passion. Are you ready to make elephants fly? Let's welcome in Stephen Hoffman, better known as Captain Hoff. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. Today, our series, My Strength is My Story, we have on, well, if you could only make elephants fly. We have Steve Hoffman with us, also known as Captain Hoff. He is an angel investor, partner of Founders VC, LP in August Capital, and a serial entrepreneur. He is also the captain and CEO of Founders Space, one of the world's leading incubators and accelerators with over 50 partners in 22 countries. Always innovating on his life, Captain Hoff has tried more professions than cats have lives, including, well, we already talked about the serial entrepreneur, the venture capitalist, angel investor, studio head, oh, we're not done yet, computer engineer, filmmaker, Hollywood TV executive, coder, game designer, my kids are so in, manga, rewriter, animator, and voice actor. And now he adds author to his list with his brand new book, Make Elephants Fly, The Process of Radical Innovation. Whew, Steve, I need some radical innovation today. Come on in, Captain Hoff.
Hello.
How are you?
Good to be here.
Oh, I'm so
happy. I'm doing great.
Awesome. You just got in and flew in from Japan. Just a little side trip, right?
I spend, on average, 70% of my time travel. So it's not unusual that I'm in Japan.
Oh, my goodness. So
I was in China before that and Malaysia before that.
Where did you spend your New Year's?
My New Year's was spent in China.
Wow. I bet that was fascinating.
I was in the ancient capital of China called Nanjing, having dinner with the government, which is what you do in China.
Well, we could just stay there and talk all day about that.
Yes. My company, Founderspace, is all over the world. And so that's what drags me out to all these different countries. It's an incredible experience.
Well, tell us a little bit about Founderspace, because I have read your book. And for those people who are listening right now and they're like, what in the world? We're talking about Silicon Valley and a, you know, serial entrepreneur. Yeah, we've got a man on fire here for innovation, and it's radical innovation. He makes elephants fly. But you do have a company. It's called Founderspace. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Founderspace, I started with my partner 6 years ago. And our mission has been to incubate and accelerate startups all over the world. So we bring a lot of startups all across Europe, Africa, Asia, South America to Silicon Valley and help them here raise money and get their companies launched. But we also go all over the world to work with them in their home countries.
Wow, that's dedication.
It's fun.
That's a better word.
I enjoy it.
Well, I can tell, especially with your brand new book. I mean, it was titled Make Elephants Fly, and I thought, you know, you could try to make pigs fly. They make interesting bacon if you like meat, but
yes.
Make elephants fly, I'm not sure.
Well, I figured elephants are even heavier than pigs, so it would be a harder job. And actually innovating, because I work with startups, so many startups in so many different countries, I see how hard it is to come up with a really good new idea for a business that nobody's done before. It seems easy because all we do is read about the successes, but you don't see for every success, there are 99 failures that just didn't work out.
And you've had a few startups of your own. In fact, not just startups, but they've been very successful.
I've had my successes and I've had my failures. And so I know from experience how hard it is to get that elephant off the ground.
Well, what led you to really jumping into this? Because your mom was an artist, your dad was the MIT rocket scientist, and then you have Captain Hoff.
Yes. Well, originally, I was good because of the both gene sets. I was good at both math and science as well as art, but I was leaning towards art as a young. I didn't really care about technology. I was really focused when I was young on making games, board games, and games for my friends, and making movies. And my mission was to go out and be a filmmaker. But by some trick of fate, I wound up doing what I'm doing.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, when I read your bio, I was like, he has more things than cats have lives. And I thought, okay, let's go a little bit deeper. And as I read it, I'm like, really?
Well, it actually makes sense if you follow my progression. So I wanted to go to film school. My father, being very practical, an engineer, said, do not do that. Nobody makes it in Hollywood. You will be starving, a starving artist. So I listened to my father. I got an electrical computer engineering degree. And then as soon as I was done, I went to Hollywood. And I applied to USC Film School. I got in, had my master's degree there. Then I went off and worked in Hollywood. I worked in television. I worked my way up the ladder until I was a television executive. And then I saw an opportunity that I didn't have in Hollywood. So in Hollywood, I felt like everything was so commercial, and I really wanted to be an artist like my mom. I wanted to do my own projects. And so I saw an opportunity to do games because at a much lower budget, basically all you need to do is know how to code and get some other people together. You could create whatever you wanted. So I jumped into the gaming industry. And that is kind of the cross between technology and entertainment is where I made my career.
Wow. And now you're helping others do the same.
I am doing my best to help them, at least avoid all the mistakes I made and all the dead end paths that I've
Well, and that's important because there are a lot of mistakes to be made. We make mistakes every day, just when we walk, you know, wake up and we brush our teeth, we stumble, we do crazy things. Yet in business, you know, I think that's one of our setbacks, and it holds us back is that idea of, I don't know that I have what it takes. When you're working with startups, how do you help them overcome those what ifs?
It's really hard. So doing a startup is extremely hard because it not only puts you under pressure to be creative, to come up with something new, to lead a team. A lot of them have never led teams. Some of them are very young or they work in environments where they weren't really leaders. And then there's also the financial pressure because it costs money and usually you quit your job and so you have no money. And then there's marital pressure or with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, and they don't understand why you're working all the time and why you're spending all their money on this crazy idea. So all of these pressures are what people have to deal with. And, you know, what if I did this? What if I do that? Where do I go? A lot of what I do as a mentor and educator and accelerator is I work with them because I have so much experience with not just my own company. I did 3 venture-funded startups. I also have experience looking at hundreds of startups who've gone down different paths. And if I can see that they're going down a path where their business model is fundamentally broken. It won't work. It won't scale to be a big business. Then I can at least tell them. I can say, look, you're going down the wrong path. If you put another 6 months or a year into this, it's not going to make a difference. You need to actually rethink your business right now. And a lot of startup founders, myself included, have trouble accepting that what they chose to do wasn't the right thing. They don't want to give up on it. That's really the hardest thing is to give up, basically start again on something different because you recognize that what you thought of originally just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in your book, you share a lot of stories. That's one of the things that captivated me because I'm not necessarily some of these big ones, like let's just throw Apple in there, right? Well, yeah. I'm no Apple, yeah. But maybe a pear, but not an apple.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got these huge companies that have just totally grown themselves to millions and billions worth of dollars that they have, but they still have to figure a way and find their way. When I was reading the stories, even though I'm not that big Apple company, I could relate to some of the things that you share in your book. And that's one of the things that really captivated me and pulled me in was like, I could learn from everything that you put in there, even though maybe I'm just a one or two person, you know, venturist, so to speak.
That is right. So a lot of big companies, like Apple included, have made huge mistakes. I mean, the fact that Apple now is so successful, if you go back and read Steve Jobs' biography, which I encourage you to do, you'll see that there were like near life-death situations for the company over and over and over again. It wasn't a slam dunk. And they had moments where they were riding high, and then the next thing you know, Apple's like near bankruptcy, and, you know, Pixar also up and down, and his next computer, you know, it only got saved by Apple actually buying it. All of these things, for every entrepreneur who's really taking risks, who's really trying something new, you're going to encounter points where you're just on the precipice of failure. And a lot of times you'll just go the wrong direction. And sometimes you can't blame yourself for that. It's just part of life. Just like when you're in a relationship with somebody, you know, not all relationships were meant to work out. Some you have to stop. Because no matter what you do, they won't work. And others, they might have worked out if life had just been a little different, if you had just made a few different decisions. But a lot of times you just can't see what those are when you're in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it helps to have an educator, a mentor, somebody who's been through the trenches. They can actually see because they're not emotionally attached. Man, when you're in that forest, you're like, everything looks all the same. You're like, but come on, it looks great, doesn't it? It's a beautiful tree. You know, you're like, no, there's like 20 different versions of these trees standing in front of you.
Well, I've done a lot of research now on how our brains work, how human brains work. And we are masters at self-delusion. So we are masters at telling ourselves what we want to hear. And the reason we are masters at this is because throughout our evolution, it has maximized our chance of survival. You know, there are many times when you are faced with daunting situations. And if you don't tell yourself, oh, just get up off the ground, it's going to work out, keep going, and you come up with reasons for that you can believe, and not only you can believe, but everybody around you can believe in, that's how you survive. That's how you keep going. The downside of that is that sometimes that self-delusion can work against you. And that is where you need good mentorship, good peers, people who can give you advice from, like you said, a more objective point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we do miss that objective point of view and that perspective. And that was another thing in your book, which, of course, y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Make Elephants Fly, The Process of Radical Innovation. And it's radical, all right. It's really good. I've marked it up a ton already. You can see my little highlights, and there's so much that we can dive into in this book, and that's why you guys are going to have your own copy because we can't cover it all. I mean, just let me read this little highlight here. 8 rules to live or die by. Don't you want to know the 8 rules? Yeah, we're not going to tell you, though. You got to pick up your copy. So, so let's take it back to the book Make Elephants Fly. It's heavy. taking a business and getting a business off the ground makes total sense why you chose elephants and not a puppy dog. Puppy dogs are too cute anyway.
Yeah.
Pigs are just, well, they're cute too in their own right. But
puppy dogs, you can toss them in the air. They're easy to make.
Exactly. But this ton of weight, and sometimes we carry guilt when we're trying to start up our business. You make a distinction between innovation and inventions. And you write in there, innovations unlock business opportunities, while inventions bring new science and technology into the world.
Yes. And there's a big distinction. So first of all, people get confused. Inventors are not necessarily innovators, and vice versa. So to invent something new, if it's not something simple, like a new type of lure for fishing, you know, that could be pretty simple invention. Most people, to invent something new actually requires years of work. In today's world, a lot of scientific research. And most of the big breakthroughs come out of big corporations, you know, like Bell Labs was originally one of the big inventors, now AT&T. We see it out of Google, Microsoft, you know, also out of big universities and government-funded programs like DARPA. That is where the new inventions, like the internet, for example, coming out of DARPA, that change everything, right? Everybody uses it. Most startups, they don't have a lot of time. First of all, you just quit your job. You might have 6 months or a year, and they don't have a lot of money, unless you're like Elon Musk, who can just raise bucket loads of money, you know, and do whatever he wants. Most startup founders have very little time and very little money. That forces you to be an innovator, not an inventor. And what innovators do is they look around for the latest technologies that are coming into the marketplace. Most of these technologies have been around 10 or 20 years. They're not brand new, but they're new to certain markets. They haven't been exploited or used in certain businesses. And you could take this technology, whether it's mobile technology or AI, big data, blockchain is hot right now, and then you can apply it to a business to actually reinvent the business. Not invent a new technology, but reinvent how the business is done. And that is what's innovation. It's the technology opens the door for you to be the first one to go in and all of a sudden give your company a huge competitive advantage against everybody else. Because you're using this new technology that either allows you to do something much more efficiently than your competitors, meaning you can lower the price dramatically and undercut them. We call that disruption. Or it allows you to offer new products or services that are far better than anybody else. So all the existing customers are like, why should we use this, use this old technology when we can jump to this new startup, which doesn't have a track record, but is allowing us to do something we cannot do with the existing incumbent player.
Well, that I thought was just huge when you made that distinction, because I think a lot of those moms and dads are sitting there going, I got this idea and I've had this idea for years now. And now they're to the age where they're like, I can, you know, actually go forward with it. Maybe the kids are old enough where they don't have to be home 24/7 and take care of them. They can leave them by themselves, or they're becoming empty nesters. Or, you know, their kids are gone to college or whatever. And so they're looking at their dreams now, and they're bringing them out from, you know, the dust bunnies underneath things and the corners and the closets. And when you look at it going, you don't have to sit there and invent something. You can be an innovator instead.
Right. So, and there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there. We have this picture that every entrepreneur is a young college grad, or not even graduated from college, like a teenager, who's out there, you know, playing with new technology and doing a startup, but it's not true. A lot of entrepreneurs, a huge number, are, you know, over 40. And, you know, a lot are over 50, like you said, and their kids are away now, and they have the freedom, and they have the money, and they want to do something meaningful, and they want to do something new, and they want a challenge. So, these entrepreneurs have a great opportunity. Now, there's certain areas where if you're an older entrepreneur, you have to change how you do things. Now, the one reason young people are, a lot of them are doing these tech startups, is because they are playing with the new technology. They're out there using it every day. It's not that their brains are any better. In fact, they've done studies And older entrepreneurs have a higher chance of success. Think about it. You have a lot of experience, hopefully. You have a lot of relationships. You have a lot to bring to the table. But a lot of older entrepreneurs aren't out there using the latest technology. And like I said before, the latest technology, like blockchain or whatever's hot right now, those technologies are actually opening up new opportunities. They are giving your tiny company a huge advantage over the competitors who are doing things a different way. That said, there are many areas where you can innovate that don't require any technology. And I think we should talk about that. For a lot of the older entrepreneurs, they're like, I can't get into this, right? What is this blockchain and cryptocurrency and all this stuff going on?
Bitcoin?
Bitcoin. I mean, I don't even, how am I going to compete with a 20-year-old who's like totally immersed with this when I can barely understand what they're talking about? So different entrepreneurs need to look at their strengths and innovate in different ways. So let's say you have a design background, like you're a designer. Now, there are a lot of companies that have used, not cutting edge technology, nothing else but design to actually reinvent their whole business and their whole industry. Like a new approach to design, a new way to do something, a new user experience. And this could be in a restaurant. It could be in a retail shop. It can be online. A new user experience when a customer comes into it and it makes them feel different. It makes them shop in a different way. It makes them react, That is enough to catapult a company ahead of everybody else. Let me give you a couple examples of innovation outside of technology. One is Tough Mudder. Do you know Tough Mudder?
Mm-hmm.
They are that extreme challenge competitions where you crawl under barbed wire. They have electric things zapping you. You're going over fences. It's extreme competition. That isn't about technology. It's a guy saw an opportunity, guys and gals want to be macho, right? They want to prove that they can do something. They want to prove to themselves so that they feel good that they could do something they never thought they could do. So he creates these extreme competitions where everybody can do it. It started off as kind of, just, I think like a hobby, it's something he was doing for himself. But now it's this huge business. That's one opportunity. Another one that probably all women know, Lululemon. it wasn't about technology. It was about recognizing an opportunity. And the opportunity was, wow, so many people are into yoga now, and there's no specific yoga brand, right? That just caters to people who love yoga. Of course, Lululemon now has gone beyond that, right? They're a brand themselves. But at the beginning, they picked one thing, and they that was a trend happening and that was being underserved, and they innovated in that area. They came out with a whole new line of clothing and yoga mats and all these things that nobody was offering, and the market was waiting for them right there, and they jumped on board and they had a whole new business. So look at what you're good at. If you think you can play the technology game, play the technology game. Then you got to use the latest technology because that's what's going to get you ahead. If you don't have technology, you need something. You need to capitalize on something. You need to have something that nobody else is offering. If you come out with a product that's a Me Too product, you're going to be a small business forever, if that. It's really hard to survive. But if you come out with something that the market is ready for, that a lot of other people haven't offered a good product in that area, product or service, that's your opportunity to innovate and create something new.
Well, in your book, you continue to talk about, jumping off of that success for a startup, which I think is invaluable what you have given, because I think people look at their strengths, but I also think they consider their weaknesses and they sit there and think, oh, I've got to work more on my weaknesses so I can be a stronger person just to survive. Right. And here you're pointing out, no, look at your strengths and what can you do? So you also talk about in your book about catching the wave.
Yes.
How do you catch the wave and stay connected and on trend?
Okay. Catching the wave. This is what I alluded to just previously. There are waves happening all the time. So there are technology waves coming out. Like right now, everybody's into AI, artificial intelligence, right? Big data, blockchain, all these new technologies that are reshaping industry. If you use those technologies, basically because they're new, and you can do things nobody has ever done before, you're catching that wave. The wave is also, the media is focused on this. So they're covering them. They're talking about cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin and all these different things. So if you're in that space and you're doing something inventive, the media will latch onto you and you get a huge, it's like a wave. It basically carries your business, like propels your business forward faster than you could ever swim, right? And that's what you want. The other waves are trends happening. You know, they're trends in the media, they're trends in fashion, they're trends in the food industry. There's trends in every single industry. If you're into an industry and you can see that trend building and you see it hasn't been served and you can innovate on a new way to serve that trend, you can catch that wave because there's this huge momentum building, not just with what people want, demand, but also with the media, the press, everything else. They're looking for stories. And the media, as you know, the media is very good at sensing, sniffing out new story, new trends, because what they want is to, basically the media, if you study it, it's about entertainment. It's about grabbing people's attention. If you're going to get them with a headline, it has to be a something that they're looking for already. I have a theory. It's about the media. It's about markets. It's about business. And the theory, my theory is you can't make a market. Nobody makes a market. Like Steve Jobs didn't make the market. He made the iPod, right? But the iPod was catching a trend. MP3 players were already selling like crazy before Apple came out with the iPod. What he did was come out with a better way, a better device for storing your music, getting 1,000 songs and onto one tiny device in the old days was a big deal, right? And to navigating, because you know how you browse the music. He came out with a better way to access your music on a digital device. But he didn't invent that. The market was there. The same thing when he made his personal computer, you know, the same thing when they made the Macintosh, the same thing when what they're doing with the iPhone, all of those and the iPad, those markets were there. There were already tablets before the iPad. There were already smartphones before the iPhone. Nobody remembers them. But, you know, the Palm Pilot and others were already hot products that incorporated many of the features that the iPhone had. He just made it better. And a lot of what Steve Jobs did was through design, not technology. It wasn't like he had a new technology, but he was a brilliant designer and he envisioned a way to create a new user experience and put all the pieces together in a kind of an ecosystem that people hadn't done before.
Yeah. And he connected it also to the emotional level of the
user. Yes. Yeah. Steve Jobs was very sensitive to how things felt, right? When he created a product and you opened the box, like he was such an amazing innovator. He actually took the unboxing experience. When you open a new product, it took it to a whole new level. You know, little things like the paper and how you open the box and how you first see the product. He made it such a beautiful experience that people like coveted Apple. I remember opening up like, you know, for a Macintosh laptop when they were coming out the boxes. It was just like you were so excited because if you went and bought a PC, it was just like they shipped it to you in a crappy looking box and it was a nothing experience. But when you opened the Apple, it was like better than Christmas. You know, now everybody does that. So that innovation, he led the way. It's what made Apple so big. But now everybody does it. The other thing like Steve Jobs did was little details. Like he wanted when you open the box and you plug in your iPod or when you turn on your iPod, it works. He didn't want you to have to charge it. Everybody else made you charge the device. So you'd have to sit there and wait an hour or more to actually use what you got. But Steve Jobs said, no. When you open that box, it turns on and it works instantly. All of those tiny innovation added up made Apple what it is today.
And that's something that we all can do. Whatever your business is right now, whatever you're dreaming, take it and actually walk through the whole process as to how your customer, your whoever you're serving, whoever gets the service or the product, actually sees it, touches it, how they hear it, the smell that comes.
Right. So if you're delivering food to somebody's home, what is that experience when they get the food, right? Do you just leave a box there crammed with food? Or is it like a magical experience? If you're shipping a product, a fashion product, like when people come into your store to try on the different dresses and stuff, what is their experience? Like there's room for innovation there. When I travel a lot, right? And I see like all these hotels, they can do so much better job, right? When you come into the hotel, when you come into the room, you know, a lot of, like, I've often wondered, does anybody in their big hotels, and some of them are very fancy, like, does anybody actually sleep here? Like, I was in a hotel the other night, and they have these new devices, like, you know, just, there's so many lights in a hotel room,
yes,
and the master light somehow never seems to turn them all off. So every night when I, like, go to sleep, I might spend half an hour trying to figure out how to get the damn lights off. And sometimes there's these little lights by the bed, like under, you know, the nightstand near the bed. You can't figure out how to turn that light off. And I'm like, how? I mean, of course the people in the hotel know, but have they ever taken a new person into their hotel and watched how they spent like a half an hour trying to figure out how to turn? And that's so frustrating because you're totally jet lagged and you're exhausted. I just want to go to sleep. I just want to get these lights off. I've actually, like, in the hotel rooms, in on more than one occasion, actually had to unscrew the light bulb. Like, I literally could not figure out how to turn off the light. And, or, like, I was, when I was, like, ripping out the cords, I was like, I can't even unscrew this light bulb. I don't. And, you know, these are room for innovation. And so every business, no matter how mature, you think the hotel industry, they do this all the time. They must, like, know that people have this problem. But apparently
clap on, clap off.
Yeah, exactly. I just want some simple way to get the damn light off.
Exactly. Oh, and that's so true. Honestly, we don't think like that. I don't believe we do. Those are things that you can glean from this book. This wonderful little nugget of joy here, Make Elephants Fly, The Process of Radical Innovation. You'll want to, I'm telling you, you're going to want to pick it up. I mean, it talks about so many different things in here that we could be here forever. And I just think
I won't keep you here forever.
But I think it's really encouraging because what you're sharing here is people do this in the bigger corporations. And I think as smaller startups, whether it's a one-man solo entrepreneur or woman, I mean man in general, or whether it's two or three or a team of people starting it together, small, yes, intimate, yes, but they're already sitting there going, we can't compete with these big ones. And I'm like, you just shared your hotel story. Yeah, you can. You've got a bed and breakfast. You can up one.
You can compete with any of the big players. And I'll tell you why. Sometimes, well, first of all, if you're in a big company, if you worked in a big company, you know, people stop trying. They just do what everybody else does. They do what their boss is demanding them to do. And their boss is doing what they think their boss wants. And it's very hard for big companies to do. So if you're an independent entrepreneur, you have huge opportunities. And one of the most interesting things is that when people are in a business a long time, they stop seeing the business through fresh eyes. Like the hotel industry, I was saying, you know, I just want to get the light off at night. And it's very hard to find all the switches to turn off all the lights because there's so many now. You know, used to be you just had like two switches, a lamp by your bed. And now they have like dozens in every little nook and cranny of the room. But a new person coming into that will all of a sudden understand what the people who do it all the time don't understand. So whatever your business is, you know, whether it's, you know, running your own bed and breakfast, as you say, running, you know, a retail store, running an online website where you're selling stuff to customers, if you can start to look at that business differently than everybody else, you have a huge competitive advantage. And sometimes it's really hard because you've been doing the business a while yourself. So what you need to do is what a lot of people don't do. And that is to bring in people to your business who have never seen it before and ask them, if you were to rethink this business, if you were to make any change you could make, what would it be? And really listen to them. Start to see it through their eye. This is why a lot of young people, a lot of people in their 20s, can go into a business like insurance that they know nothing about. Like, they don't know anything about insurance. Their parents have bought all their insurance. They have no clue. But they can go into that business and actually totally reinvent it. So they can totally reinvent it because they know nothing about it. And they're like, why aren't the insurance company doing it this way? What if we tried this? Like, why are they doing it? The insurance company is doing it that way because they've done it that way forever. And they've never thought that they would do it another way. So in your business, it doesn't matter how old you are, if you can actually put yourself in the frame of mind and use other people and as your surrogates to actually look at the business differently, then you can start to see things that nobody sees. Mm-hmm. And this is where innovation comes from, and that's where opportunity comes.
Yeah, and you can do that starting with your family and friends, reaching out to communities that you involve yourself in, and also then going further, investing in your business where you would come to Founderspace and say, I want Captain Hoff to take care of me.
Yes, you can go to Founderspace and my incubator and accelerator. But an even better way is if you only, let's say you're a business and you're like starting out and you only have three customers. Well, three customers, they're your key. They have actually tried your product. They're using your product. There's something about it that they like. You can sit down with them, every single new customer you get, and try to walk through the business from their perspective. What made them attracted to you? What was, sometimes what you think they like about your business isn't what they actually like. They actually came to you for a totally different reason or because of some other thing that you're offering that you didn't even know. And it can surprise you. Like, you came in here because you thought that we had this and you wanted this, but this is really what we think the value is. No, this. There's a whole process, and I talk about it in the book. And this is something that I think every entrepreneur can understand. It doesn't require any technology or anything else to actually innovate. And it's what's called outcome-based decision-making. So outcome-based innovation. And when you think about it, a customer can't always tell you what they want because a lot of times they don't know what they want. Like, you couldn't have gone up to Steve Jobs and said, I want an iPhone and I want it to look like this and that and that, you know.
Maybe
you would have never,
pink.
Right. You might have told him the color,
yeah,
right? But
right.
You wouldn't have been able to tell him how to build the iPhone.
Exactly.
But before it was out, now that it's out, you can see, oh my God, it's amazing. I do want it, you know. But what you could have told him is some outcomes you wanted. And I knew these outcomes before the iPhone was out. Like, I wanted an easier way to, like, the address book on the old feature phones. Like, if you remember the old phones, the flip phones, you know, trying to get somebody's address, entering the address, getting, it was such a pain, right? I want an easy way to access the people I know and connect with them. I want an easy way to talk with them. I use email on my PC or my Mac. I'd want email on my phone, and I want it to be just as easy to use as a phone. That's outcome-based. I want this outcome. I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to design the product. But if you can go to your customers, as I was saying, and say, tell me what things you want, right, when you come into my business, when you use my service, how would you want it to be? And you don't look at, you're not looking for them to tell you how to make what changes to make. You just look what outcome they want. I want to feel better when I use your service. I want it, like, after I'm done, I want to feel better. Oh, well, we got to make our representatives make you feel better. Now, how would we do that? You work back from the outcome. Should we make them, like, you say, your service works really well, but every time I leave it, I feel sort of like, yeah, I don't know, you know? I'm not super happy, right? Well, it's probably our customer service or our sales reps, like, how they're dealing with you. We got to innovate on how they interact with you. So, there are a lot of examples you can look for in very successful businesses where they've done this. They've taken the outcome and then they work backwards. And they innovate on how to get that outcome. And they try a lot of different things. Like, are there many different ways we can make our customer feel better? Do we do it with a follow-up, you know, with them to make sure they are happy with their service? What do people say while they're on the phone or online to them? How do we deliver the products to them? All these different.
We all need to have that outcome base because sometimes we're just staying too much on the forward side and we're too much in the planning and we don't even get to where, well, what does it look like on the other end? We can sometimes figure out that middle stuff when we look at the outcome base.
Right. And even with your show, right? You can call up your customer. I'm just using you as an example, right? You can call up your audience right now after this and say, like, what did you really like? Like, what are the episodes you love of my shows? What are the episodes you don't find very useful or exciting? And after the show, are there certain pieces of information you would really want that would be really valuable? That's the other area I really focus on, value. Like, how can you create the maximum amount of value for your customers or your audience, right? What do they value? And how can you give them more than they ever expected? So if they tune in to the show here, you know, every week. How can we make that the best possible and most valuable use of their precious time? One innovator in the world who's incredible at this is Jeff Bezos. And Jeff Bezos is the founder of Amazon. And we, you know, most of us now use Amazon without even thinking about it, but it wasn't destined to be Amazon. It could have been any of a 10,000 other e-commerce companies that were all doing roughly the same thing at the same time. Well, why was Jeff Bezos so brilliant? He always said, I will put my customer, creating value for my customer, ahead of everything else. And now we take a lot of his innovations for granted. And I remember I was very early in the e-commerce game, shopping online. And one of the things that I made me switch to Amazon is that whenever I wanted to return a product, all these other online retailers made it so hard to return the product. They didn't want you to return because they would lose money. And it was a hassle for them, right, to accept a return. So they would bury the return button, and you call somebody, and it'd give you this, like, you know, message tree of all. It'd be, like, so hard to return the product. Amazon said, if people want to return a product, and I can make it easier for them, I'm going to make it easier. I don't care if we get more returns. I don't care if our returns triple. That is value to my customer. And by doing that, he had unexpected, there was an unexpected result. He made more money. He didn't lose money. Because people were, first of all, they would go to Amazon over other sites. Oh, if I can buy this somewhere else on Amazon, I can return it easily. Why don't I just buy it from Amazon? Second, they would buy more products because you feel like, well, if I'm thinking about buying it, but returning is such a hassle. You know, I don't want to have to return it. Maybe I won't buy it. Right. But on Amazon, you're like, oh, returning is super easy. Like, if I don't like it, I'll just return it. So all in all, he ended up making more money by doing something that you would think would make less money for the company. And that was based on value. Now you look at Amazon today, they offer free shipping, they offer free movies, you know, if you become a Prime member, free music, on and on and on, free storage, all of these things. Amazon keeps piling on the value because they know that every time they give you more value, they are locking you into their ecosystem. They are making you come back to Amazon for just one more reason. So in your business, whether it's you who does these great, you know, interviews, or somebody who runs their own store, or, you know, somebody who runs a bed and breakfast, whatever it is, think of the value you can provide your customer. How can I provide my customers so much value that they always want to come back, and they, whenever they think of my business, they want to tell people, my God, you should stay at that bed and breakfast. It's like so incredible. They do so much for you. Like, they leave little chocolates for you. They actually will sit down with you and explain everything in the city. They'll do, you know, they have all these discounts for all these local events going on. Create more value for your customers. Mm-hmm.
I love it. You're just nailing it home, Captain Hoss.
This is what I think about every day.
Your brain must never stop.
Yeah. I love doing this. I love working with entrepreneurs, like all sorts of entrepreneurs, because I get with really smart, creative people who are struggling with their business, and then I can brainstorm with them. You know, I told you I wanted to be an artist. Like, that was my job, not to be a business person. I never got an MBA. So, but I sort of approach all of business like this creative process. Like, we're going through this creative process together. We've got to get all these ideas, and it's really fun.
It is a lot of fun. All right. So with that fun, though, comes some excuses. Mm. And, you know, time seems to be one of our biggest excuses. What do you do? You know, whether you're wanting to lose weight or whether you're wanting to start a business, you know, you write in your book about law.
Moore's Law. Moore's Law basically is that as innovation progresses and technology progresses, you know, he's the founder of Intel. Mm-hmm. So he was talking that we're going to double the speed of processors every 18 months. Now, that idea is that new technology is allowing things to speed up, right? It's allowing things you to do stuff better all the time. And that is why I'm a big proponent of using new technology. But I'm a big proponent because new technologies are always, always advancing. The arrow of time and technology and innovation is going up and up and up. And every time a new technology enters the world, every time it is born into this world, all of a sudden it has the potential to change every business on the planet. There was a time when the web first started, and I was an early web guy, web pioneer. Like, domains came, I was one of the first ones.
Maybe a little bit web. More hair.
Yeah. I had a lot more hair. I have like a lot more hair. I couldn't even see how huge the web would be. Like, would everybody in the world need a website? It seemed absurd at that time. Right. Because like very few people, I was like there were some scientists and other people, and very few people had websites. So it'd be seemed insane that your local barber would need a website, let alone, a Facebook account, an Instagram account to actually promote their business, Twitter. But now everybody needs them. Everybody needs them. That's the what, a single technology can actually influence every single business on the planet. Everybody needs a mobile phone, right? Everybody. Before you were like, who needs a smartphone? At least like all I need a phone for is making phone calls. It's hard to envision how these technologies will impact everything and how fast the change will happen. In just a matter of years, we go from thinking, oh, who needs Twitter, to actually everybody's on Twitter, and it can happen in a matter of 3 to 4 years. So this is why no matter what business you're in, whether you're in a very traditional business that you think never will be impacted by this technology, I tell you, it doesn't hurt to be paying attention to the latest technology and experimenting with how it can impact your business and doing this ahead of competitors. It doesn't mean you have to be a techie. A lot of these technologies, they're made to be simple to use. Like, it's not hard. I mean, anybody can figure out Twitter. It's a very easy thing. There's many new services coming online now that are very easy to use. It does take a little time. And as you were talking about, time is at a premium, right?
Yes.
Like, where do you focus all your energy? And that's a whole nother, I'm like a super, try to be super efficient about my time. Mm-hmm. And I always struggle with it. And I miss many opportunities because I'm so efficient with my time. So there are a lot of technologies that I'll kind of be late on because you simply, like all of us are so busy. We're all running our businesses. We all have our lives. And I'm constantly trying to limit the number of technologies I use because I can't have, a WhatsApp account, a Twitter account, a Facebook account, an Instagram account, a WeChat account, a Line account, a Kakao. There's a million of these services out there. And how could I even monitor them all? I would have no time to run my business and have a gazillion different accounts. So I try to limit it. But sometimes when you limit it, you actually miss an opportunity. Mm. And I can tell you personally, I was in the blockchain, which is a new technology, early on. And then I made a mistake with the blockchain in that I saw that Bitcoin, I saw wasn't working. I was like, why would I use Bitcoin? Now, this is my own personal mistake. I was like, why would I use Bitcoin? Because a credit card is so much easier. I'm not going to figure out all this complex technology to go buy something at my local grocery store or online with Bitcoin. Also, Bitcoin was fluctuating like crazy. So I was like, it's going up and down and up and down. And like, I want to know that if, I put money in there, what it's worth. It's not the ideal payment solution. And I was right in that respect. Bitcoin has yet to take off as a payment solution. But because I dismissed it and I said, this isn't going to work as a payment solution, it's not a good payment platform. My credit card company actually pays me money to use it. Why wouldn't I use that? Bitcoin has to actually pay money to do these transactions and do everything. So why would I use Bitcoin? And I was right. It's still a crappy, crappy payment solution. What I missed out on was that Bitcoin was a great opportunity for people to gamble. It was like the ultimate speculative device, the vehicle out there. It was like, you're not allowed to gamble in the U.S., online. Well, Bitcoin is the biggest lottery out there happening. It is like everybody was gambling on Bitcoin, and it has exploded, right, as this legal way, or semi-legal, we don't even know yet, whether it's fully legal or not, way to gamble online. And that's what's driven the price of Bitcoin to astronomical levels. Well, if I had seen this opportunity instead of being so busy that I was like not playing around with the technology, a more, I should have been playing around with it. Then, you know, of course I would have bought $1,000 worth of Bitcoin at the very early days. And now, you know, had that turn into millions of dollars. We could all look back and say, well, I should have done it. And I was there at the very beginning, and I was kind of, stupid enough, or not stupid, it's blind. I was blind to the opportunity because I looked at, from my experience, I looked at one possible use case, which was what everybody was touting at the time to be this new, new type of cryptocurrency. And I missed the bigger one, is to be this new, casino. and that was that's the big play that's going on right now with Bitcoin. I mean, if you want to go, you know, gamble your life savings away, go buy some Bitcoin or any of these other cryptocurrencies, you know, like Ethereum and all of them out there. You know, you might make a fortune, and literally tomorrow you might lose your entire life savings in your retirement. So I tell people, and it was just, I tell people, if you want, and I'm fundamentally opposed to just gambling. I think a lot of people lose, you know, it's a horrible addiction, and it can cost you your whole retirement and your kids' college savings in your home. So please, if you're going to go do these cryptocurrencies, they're only do them if it's money you can afford to lose, because you're basically going to Vegas right now. And I'm saying that because that is the underlying value. The underlying value is, as soon as the speculation stops, these currencies will collapse. Mm-hmm. They will collapse down to a value which equals their actual utility value, which is still extremely low, right? They're primarily being used only to gamble. I don't see a lot of other use cases that have taken off, although there will be some in the future. So, but it's a very speculative. Now, all of us are blind to these opportunities. All of us are super busy, right? We're just so incredibly busy with our lives. You have to pick where you do it. So what I recommend to people is, you can't seize every opportunity. Like, I missed out on the Bitcoin opportunity because I was focused elsewhere. That's fine. You're never going to have time to do everything. So look at your business, but always keep an open eye to a few things that you can try in your business that other people aren't trying. So be prepared in your business to look at some new technologies. You can't look at every technology out there, and start to imagine how it will change your business, how it can impact your business, and then invest some time in actually learning that and playing around with that.
Yeah, he's already making elephants fly. That's why you got to pick up your own copy of your book, Make Elephants Fly, The Process of Radical Innovation. Seriously, there is just so much jammed in here. And we'll just have to have you back, because our time just seems to get away from us. And yeah. I love just your creative side, the design. You even write in your book, I love design. And I think, you know, I can tell, Steve, in your writings, that this isn't something that you just kind of put together and like, oh, well, I'm just going to sit down and write a book. You have a heart for this. This is like in your blood.
I'm a passionate guy. I like you love what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. You do it, you know, not for the money. You do it because you're passionate. You care about it. You're really good at it. Because you're so passionate, right? People relate to you. I can tell you, I mean, you have the energy. And that's what one of my passions is design. That's why I got into game making. That's why I got into the internet. That's, you know, and that's why I helped startups. But all of us have passions. And I think a big part of innovation, which I put into the book, is actually tapping those passions, tapping them intelligently. You know, it's one thing to be passionate about something, but how can I do it in a way that builds a big business? Or builds a business at least that I can live off of. I'm not starving. And I think when you know your passion, that's when you start to play around with different ways of applying that passion to different business models. All of us need to experiment with that, because we can be passionate. I could have been many different things in my life. Like I could, like I said, I still went to film school. I could have been a passionate filmmaker. You can imagine me now just telling stories about movies, right? Instead of doing what I could have been. I wanted to be a writer. At one point, I wanted to be a painter. At another point, I wanted to be an animator. I tried all of those. You know, I didn't succeed at them all. You know, I'm not I'm not a famous fiction writer right now. My book is getting pretty well known around the world. But I'm not a famous fiction writer, and I had envisioned myself at one time being that. I'm not a famous painter. And at one point, I had envisioned myself going down that path. So there, we can all turn into many. We're not destined to just be one thing. But when we do have a passion, we can try applying that passion in different ways to different businesses or different business models and ideas, and then start seeing what works. The key is to what I'm always looking for is you experiment, right? You say, I'm passionate about this. Now I'm going to devise an experiment and I'm going to see what happens, what ideas, what feedback I get. And if the feedback is like overwhelming, then I'm going to go with that. Yes, I could do 10 other different things, but I'm going to go with where that demand is, because none of us create demand. Demand is, like I said earlier, demand is already out there. What our job is as an innovator, you have to think of yourself as a passionate explorer, you know, as somebody who goes out and explores new opportunities to find where that demand is. It's like you are, you know, if you are in the oil business and you're like, I think there's oil under here. There's either going to be oil under there or under this plot of land or not. But you aren't going to know until you start drilling. But if you drill and you find nothing, you can drill all you want on that plot of land and you're still going to get nothing. You can go deeper and deeper and deeper. You can drill 1,000 wells and there's going to be nothing there. That is like oil is like demand, right? It's going to be there or there, it's not. So it's good to do a lot of exploratory drilling, quick drilling, wildcatting, until you hit the gusher, you know? And when the gusher goes, you go with it. If you only get a little oil coming out and it's not enough to sustain you, like to feed your family and grow your business, you got to drill another well. It doesn't matter how passionate you are about this particular plot of land. You could be like, this is where I knew there would be oil. Well, there's no oil there, or there's not enough to feed your family. You know, you got to go out and get new land. You got to abandon everything you put into this land. Those are what we call sunk costs, right? You sunk your well, you bear the cost, but it's not producing. There's no point in to keep trying to drill here. So this analogy is very important, because a lot of entrepreneurs, once they've sunk costs, they can't leave it. Right? They're like, I put so much into it and I'm so passionate about it. I can find a way to make it work. Well, I will tell you, more entrepreneurs fail from trying too hard to make something work than from trying many different things. You know, you always feel like you're giving up when you move on, or you're losing money because you've tried to put some, you know, you put a lot of money, you put tens of thousands of dollars into this, you spend all this time and it's not working. Well, it's not working. You know, it's time to basically cut your losses and move on. You've got to get in that mind frame. So I'm a very passionate guy, but I learned that my own passions can be my own worst enemy. One of my startups failed literally because I would not give up. Literally, I was so passionate about this idea. Like, it was this crazy, crazy idea. And I talk about it in my book, where I was going to have avatars walking on the websites, like little characters, avatars, animated characters, yep, where you could go to any website and meet all your friends and chat and meet all these other characters and find all these virtual goods. It was such a cool idea. And everybody I showed it to loved it. The problem was they only loved it for a short amount of time. They weren't, it didn't provide enough value for them to come back and keep using it over, you know, after a month, they would drop off. But no matter, I thought I could solve the problem. I was like, I'm passionate about this. And I kept trying thing after thing after thing, adding new features, making changes. And at the end of the day, this did not work. And the company failed because of that. So when, you know, if there isn't that demand there, and it doesn't matter what your business is, I don't care any business in the world, you got to move on. And so it's, but when you're a passionate person, hopefully you can apply that passion to your next thing. It's not like moving on, you should sit there and beat yourself up about it, you know, as a failure. I actually did. Like, I beat myself up after that failure. I felt like, man, I am just like a lame entrepreneur. You know, I was never cut out to do this, because why would I, around me, other people were succeeding, and here I was, you know, a failure. That happens to all of us. And I'll tell you, like, right now, if I hadn't moved on, I wouldn't be where I am today. You know, right now, today, I've enjoyed a lot of success, but all that success came at a huge emotional price. I beat myself up. In my head, I said very negative things about my own capabilities. And what I discovered was, none of that helps, right? All those negative things only made it harder for me to go on and succeed again. All of us, you know, if all of us fail, And it's part of the process of being innovative. It's a part of the process of being an entrepreneur. It's part of trying new things. At a certain point, you have to say, I failed. That's fine. That's like perfectly fine. I had to rewrite that script in my head and say, I'm not a failure because I failed. I'm somebody who tried something new and different and took a risk and it didn't work out. That's what I am. And I can learn from this. And that's why I'm a teacher now. You know, I teach a lot of people because I couldn't teach you what it is to be an entrepreneur if I actually didn't fail, and not in a small way, fail in a big way, in a way that made me feel like I could never do another company. That's how I felt at my lowest point. I was like, I can never do this again. I just can't not do this again. And I actually went out and took like a normal, like salary job. I was so depressed. So, I was like, I just need to escape. I just need to do something to have time to breathe. And so all you entrepreneurs out there who have failed, or are failing right now, I know where you're at. I empathize with you. I've been there.
Yeah. And that's why you're going to want to pick up your own copy of his brand new book, Make Elephants Fly, The Process of Radical Innovation. You're having radical thoughts already, aren't you? I know you are. You're just, I can hear it now.
Some of my radical thoughts are actually very practical. You know, I'm a practical guy at heart, you know, because I've seen so many people fail. I failed myself. I picked myself off the ground. Like after my biggest failure came my biggest successes. They came only because I went out there and then tried something totally different. And I was like, oh my God, you know, this actually works. You know, and whatever. Now I'm constantly experimenting. So I'm constantly trying stuff and failing. Like it's over and over, but I'm doing it much faster than I did before. I'm doing it super fast. I'll go out there. I'll say, look, what's the smallest thing I can try to see if this works? And if it doesn't work, I just kill it. I'm like, okay, the demand isn't there. People don't really want this. I thought it was a great idea. I'm totally passionate about this. I have to rechannel my passion and try something a little different. I did this, like, I'll give you an example of failure turns to success, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did this in China. Like, what's China? 2.5 years ago, I didn't even never even been to China. I didn't even know, right? Like, China's this other crazy country, and they have all these laws, and it's almost every entrepreneur that goes there has a really hard time because it's really hard for foreigners to compete in China. But I got invited to go there, and because I'm a curious, passionate person, I went. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. This is, you know, really amazing culture. Like, I knew nothing about China. I started reading all these books. And then I went back there a few other times, and then I saw an opportunity. I said, wow, there's this huge demand in China for what I'm doing here already successfully in Silicon Valley, which is running these incubators and accelerators and helping startups grow and do all this stuff. And there's a big demand. They're doing it in China, but they want somebody from Silicon Valley to come there with our ideas, our way of thinking, our way of doing it. So literally less than 2 years ago, I said, okay, I'm going to put more effort into this. It seems like there's a big demand, right? So I went in there and now, we have opened up offices all across China. Like I am more famous now in China than I am in the US. And I put even more time into the US. It just like went like crazy, right? Like, because the demand was there for exactly what we had. So we opened up like in Shanghai, and then we just opened this year in Beijing. We opened in, 2016, we opened in Shanghai. 2017, we opened in Beijing, their biggest college town called Wuhan. We're about to open in 4 more cities. The deals are done and Founder Space is opening. My book is a huge bestseller there. All of these things happen very, very quickly, like literally within the span of like a year and a half. Like it just went, boom, our business went. And I found that as I go into new countries, we are taking off really, really fast. So there's a lot of, like what I saw here was there are a lot of incubator accelerators in Silicon Valley. It's very crowded. There are a lot of them. We have become pretty well known in Silicon Valley, like one of the very top, but it's still extremely competitive. But when I take Silicon Valley and all our knowledge to another market like China or South Korea or, you know, different countries in Europe, places like that, all of a sudden I have a huge competitive edge because I am a Silicon Valley guy. Like I was raised in California. I grew up in California. This is my home. And now I'm bringing all this in our way of teaching and doing to other countries and tapping a demand that's there. So what I'm telling entrepreneurs out there is that look at your business, like where you are now, and then try something new. Try something crazy, like going to China, right? I'm not saying go to China literally. I'm just saying that you know, if I had been practical, I would have never gone there, right? I would have, but I'm a dreamer. I'm a guy who likes to try different things, right? So, and I'm a curious person. So imagine your business in a totally different way and take it into a totally different space, a totally different market that you didn't even think there was a potential, and try to connect those dots. And if you're the first one to do that, like if you're at the very beginning of that wave that we talked about earlier, wow, you can catch that wave and your business will just grow really, really fast. I see it not just in my business, but in all these entrepreneurs I work.
Well, it's time to make elephants fly. And I know, Captain Hoff, they're going to want to get in touch with you. Where can people connect with you?
Oh, so you can just go to founderspace.com. And you can email me. My nickname in Silicon Valley is Captain Hoff. So I'm the captain of Founderspace. So if you email captain@founderspace.com, I will respond. That's my email. That's all you have to do.
Well, that's awesome. Well, this series is called My Strength is My Story. So we could have you on. Well, we'll have to have you back on because we could be here forever.
But thank you.
I have one last question for you. Yeah. With it being called My Strength is My Story, what has your story gifted you?
Oh, so I'm constantly telling my story. So like, I mean, that's why I love your show. First of all, because I believe storytelling is the fundamental thing that drives all of us, every single entrepreneur, every single business person, even in our personal lives. We are always telling our story. We're telling our story when we make friends, right? How do we make friends? You go up to people you don't know and start telling your story, and they tell their stories, and you find commonalities. When we run our business, they're all based on storytelling. You know, even these venture capitalists, I mean, you got their MBA at Harvard or, you know, went to MIT, and they're super analytical, quant type people. They're not looking at the numbers. They're just listening to your story, honestly. They're listening. And the great storytellers like Elon Musk, you know, people out there, Bill Gates is a great storyteller, all these people, Zuckerberg, you know, they are telling great stories, and those stories resonate with people. And they get money, and they get opportunities, and they get media and all these things. I am, you know, my story, I mean, I've been kind of telling you bits of my story right now. I've been telling you, like, my struggles, like how hard it is. And how hard it was for me to be a successful entrepreneur, how passionate it was, how I took my different passions in life for art and design and combined them with business to create new opportunities. My story is that I'm always, part of my story is I've tried many careers. You said, like, I have more careers than cats have wives, right? So I'm the type of person, you know, normally when you try a lot of things, you never become great at anything because you're always like, as soon as you start to get good, you're on to the next thing. I'm one of those people, you know? I'm one of these people who, like, I get bored easily. And that's a detriment. Like, if I'd stuck with any of my, if I just stuck with filmmaking, you know, I might be a great filmmaker right now. But I was like, oh, I want to try this, you know, game thing, and I want to try this animation thing, and I want to do all these different things. So it's very hard to become good at stuff if you don't go deep and stick with it. But there's also a strength in that, right? And that's one of the reasons I have become a good teacher, part of the reason I can inspire people, and part of the reason I have a lot, you know, a lot of different experiences to draw on when I mentor startups is because I've tried so many different things. So both my strength and my weakness are one and the same, right? And that is my story. My story is that sometimes your biggest weakness, if you apply it in the right way, can become your biggest strength. So your weaknesses aren't always weaknesses. It just depends how you apply them and how they impact your life. All of us have weaknesses. All of us have strengths. We got to look for how to transform our weaknesses into assets, and then how to take our strengths and amplify them. And I could talk on and on with you about this, but there are many different ways to do this, and not just one way. And that's what's exciting about, you know, being alive, right? Being, yes. You know, doing what we're doing.
That's right. Well, I am so glad that you have taken the time to put pen to paper to help us make elephants fly. Thank you so much for your time, Captain Hoff. We salute you today.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.